1, 2, 3. Welcome to Encore Nutrition, 2 Ps in a podcast, a show that simplifies the overwhelming world of health and nutrition with evidence-based science.
We're Elise and Lauren, your accredited practicing dietitians, empowering you with the knowledge and strategies to make real change today.
This week, we're keeping you caffeinated with the impact of coffee on our health, sleep, exercise performance, and more.
Long black, thanks.
Hello, can I please have a soy latte?
Medium latte, one sugar, and a baby chino, of course.
Can I get a long macchiato, please?
Small 3/4 almond milk latte, please.
Iced soy latte, please.
Regular latte for me, thanks.
Skinny soy chai decaf me, thank you.
Orange mocha frappuccino! Yeah!
Yeah! Now, this ep is a bit of a tribute to Elise, who can't be here with me today. She's busy consulting, so it's just me, Lauren, here on my lonesome, which is a little bit sad. So I thought I'd try and bring Elise here in spirit with us through one of her favourite topics, which is coffee. And we know that coffee is the second most popular beverage in the world, second only to water. And it's also the world's most valuable traded commodity next to petrol. Globally, people consume about 2.25 billion cups of coffee every day. And interestingly, there's been a sharp increase in search hits for coffee since March 2020, aligned with the commencement of the COVID crisis. So I think when the world is feeling vulnerable, we do tend to turn to coffee. It's loved by people all around the world and for very, very good reason. Not only does it help us come to life and tolerate the world, it's also got some really surprising health and performance benefits. So today I'm going to give you a bit of a coffee highlights reel, focusing on the impact on disease and health, exercise performance, sleep, and I'll talk through the ideal amount and timing. So when it comes to health, in healthy people, when we compare those who consume coffee to those who don't, habitual coffee consumption of around about 3 to 5 cups a day is associated with a 15% reduction in the risk of cardiovascular disease. So we can reduce our risk of heart disease. We can reduce our risk of type 2 diabetes mellitus. We can reduce our risk of liver disease, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, and also some types of cancer. Coffee consumption, 3 to 5 cups a day, has also been linked to a longer lifespan. So aiming for 4 or 5 cups a day seems to be the happy range. The only caveat to this is Parkinson's disease, where there might be an added benefit to drinking more than 5 cups of coffee a day. So those who are getting up to 5-6 cups a day, you might be protecting yourself from the risk of Parkinson's disease. In most cases, decaf coffee should have the same beneficial effects on these health protective mechanisms, except in the case of Parkinson's, which seems to be quite closely linked to the caffeine that's found in the coffee. And you can certainly overdo it. So most research suggests that about 400 milligrams of caffeine, so the equivalent of about 4 cups of coffee a day, is safe for most healthy adults. But many people can drink far more than this without any issues. And you're more likely to be affected by the short-term effects of too much caffeine. So things like anxiety, feeling really jittery. Some people get gastrointestinal upset, insomnia, or rapid heart rate or shakiness. This is a good indication of how to set your limits. And keep in mind that there is caffeine in tea, soft drinks, energy drinks, chocolate, and also in medication. So this also adds to your caffeine load if you are trying to stick to that 400 milligrams a day. It's been estimated that roughly 80 to 100 cups of coffee would be the lethal dose. So you have to drink a hell of a lot of it for it to be a real issue. Now, one question we get asked all the time about coffee and something that comes up a lot when we're speaking to our clients is around the diuretic or dehydrating effect of coffee. And a lot of people will be describing their day, what they eat, what they drink, and they get a lot of their fluids, or they rely on coffee for a lot of their fluid intake. which doesn't necessarily bring hydration. So despite the fact that caffeine does have a mild diuretic effect, meaning that it exacerbates how much liquid or fluid we lose through our kidneys, you don't actually end up losing more fluid than you take in. So it won't necessarily dehydrate you. It won't end up with a net negative. You're more likely to end up with a bit of a net neutral scenario. So we don't count coffee towards our fluid targets because it doesn't provide a significant amount of hydration, but it won't necessarily throw you into the negatives. So probably just don't count it towards your fluid intake for the day. We also get asked a lot about coffee and exercise performance. And there has been some studies that have indicated that coffee can enhance our physical function. And this is related to caffeine's impact on the central nervous system. So coffee is a stimulant, meaning it can enhance alertness, and it can also reduce our perception of fatigue and our perception of effort. So when we're exercising, we feel like we're not working as hard, and we also feel less tired. So obviously that's a good thing, particularly where there's a mentally challenging exercise component. Those that are most likely to benefit from caffeine are those involved in team or intermittent sports. So things like basketball and footy, but also endurance sports and those that are of high intensity and short duration. So things like high jump or long jump, weightlifting even, where you need that quick, short spurt of energy. And when it comes to exercise, there has been some research into how much you need. And initially, the researchers focused on quite high doses of caffeine, but more recently, we've found that you actually can have lower doses and get similar performance benefits. And obviously, with that, you get fewer negative side effects of having a massive caffeine dose. So it's been suggested that around 1 to 3 milligrams of caffeine per kilogram of body weight is sufficient to improve performance. So for a 60 kilogram athlete, this might equate to roughly 1 to 2 cups of coffee. Timing is also important when it comes to the impact of coffee on exercise performance. Because coffee reaches peak concentration about an hour post intake and generally lasts about 3 to 4 hours, the ideal time to down your coffee is probably about 30 to 45 minutes before you train or before you perform. And often black coffee is best if you're more likely to be sensitive to exercising on a stomach full of milk. So obviously being a stimulant, that has some implications for our sleep. So we know that one of the joys of caffeine is that it perks us up in the morning, but does it also affect our sleep? And everyone's a little bit unique in this situation, but certainly the stimulating effects of caffeine in coffee can last 3 to 5 hours. And what that means is if you have it too close to bedtime, it is likely to keep you awake or make sleep a little bit more challenging. Most studies do suggest avoiding caffeine for about 6 hours prior to bed. So working backwards from when you intend to go to sleep and setting yourself a bit of a cutoff around about 6 hours beforehand would be ideal. The good news though is that a switch to tea in those 6 hours, including green tea, which has about a third of the caffeine as coffee, will be quite helpful because tea has... contains the amino acid L-theanine, which actually has relaxing and calming properties. So it might help us to get to sleep. And a lot of people do find that the ritual of a herbal tea prior to bed is a really nice way to wind down and create a bit of sleep hygiene. I guess in that same vein, if it helps us or if it makes it harder for us to get to sleep, it therefore probably helps us wake up. And certainly we know that a lot of people rely on coffee in the morning, and I can speak for Elise in order to get their day started. There is a bit of an ideal time when it comes to drinking coffee though, and this is really closely linked to our hormone levels. So it's been suggested that the ideal time to drink coffee after you wake up is actually 2 to 3 hours after waking, which is quite different to what a lot of people would do. A lot of people will get up and first thing they do is have their coffee. But delaying your coffee in the morning might actually be more beneficial for your energy levels and fatigue control. And that's because as we wake up, a hormone, cortisol, is at its highest. And cortisol is really responsible for balancing our energy levels, blood pressure, but also how we respond to stress and danger. So if we drink coffee when our cortisol is already at its highest, we might not actually be giving ourselves any additional energy because we're already stimulated. And in fact, it might actually make you feel more tired and stressed or anxious later in the day. And so the studies suggest that we wait 2 to 3 hours after waking when these cortisol levels are slowly declining to then have your coffee so that it will perk you back up again. Very controversial, not necessary if it's not your cup of tea or your cup of coffee, but something to maybe do a little self-experiment on. Change from your 7 a.m. coffee to maybe 9, 10 a.m. coffee and see if you feel any different across the course of the day. Another really interesting element of coffee is the concept of a coffee nap. Now, a colleague of mine introduced me to this theory a few years back and it really fascinated me, the idea of having a coffee just before you have a nap and the impact that might have on actually re-energizing you when you wake up from that nap. And certainly there is some research to suggest that combining caffeine with naps is more energizing than caffeine or sleep alone. And the theory is that if you drink coffee or anything caffeinated before sleeping for a short period of time, you can boost your energy levels by increasing your brain's capacity to receive the caffeine. And this is related to caffeine competing with adenosine for receptors in your brain. Now, adenosine is an organic compound whose derivatives are really important for energy processes in the body, amongst other things. And you might have heard of the terms ADP and ATP and their involvement in energy transfer. And it's the A that stands for adenosine. And so adenosine circulation increases when we feel tired, and the act of sleep brings these levels down. But having a coffee as well as sleeping might actually give us a double whammy because it blocks some of the adenosine being registered in our brain. And this can make us feel even less tired when we wake. So most of the research suggests that the best way to take a coffee nap is to have some caffeine right before you take a 15 to 20 minute nap. And importantly, keep the nap to less than 30 minutes so you don't enter into a deeper sleep cycle. That'll just make you feel even tireder when you wake up. So although it's not going to necessarily hydrate us, and for some people it might make us feel a little bit jittery or anxious at times, particularly if we have too much, generally coffee or caffeine is very hard to overdo. It's important to know your own limits, but there are some really promising benefits when it comes to health promoting effects, energy levels, stimulation, exercise performance, and a good old coffee nap. I would love to hear if someone has tried this and how they go. I really struggle to sleep after I've had caffeine. I think it's a mental thing more than anything. So please do hit us up if you're a fan of a coffee nap. I'm going to finish us off with a few fun facts about coffee just to enhance the love affair that we have with this wondrous beverage. And the first one is for all you dietitian / food lovers out there. So coffee beans, I think, interestingly, are actually pips, fruit pips, and not beans. So a coffee bean, as we know, the little brown thing, is the pip inside a really bright red fruit that's often referred to as the coffee cherry or the coffee berry. And just like ordinary cherries, the coffee fruit is also a stone fruit. And most coffee cherries would contain 2 stones inside them with their flat sides pushed together. Fun fact number 2 is that millennials spend an average of $2,008 per year on coffee. Now I'm going to put my hand up and say I spend far less than that, but I reckon Elise brings the average right on up. So if you're an avid coffee drinker, $2,000 a year to coffee. And I suspect most of you will say money well spent. Now, these fun facts has come from my local coffee shop that actually gives away their coffee grounds, the leftovers, to use in your garden. Because apparently, coffee grounds, when sprinkled around plants in the garden, will actually stop snails and slugs from eating the plants. So if you're a green thumb, give that one a go. I can't say it's necessarily helped me with my plant efforts, but I'm trying nonetheless. Another fun fact, doesn't sound so fun, but it actually is quite worthwhile, is that studies have found an association between regular and moderate coffee consumption, so 2 to 4 cups a day, and a reduced risk of suicide. So that changes when you go more than 8 cups a day, but that moderate intake, 2 to 4 cups a day, is really beneficial for our mental health, potentially. And I'll link some studies in the show notes. Next fun fact is that scientists have successfully turned ground coffee into a biodiesel. So potentially one day, coffee might be fueling our cars as well as our bodies. This one is for all of the physicists out there. So laws of physics have proven that coffee with milk in it cools about 20% slower than black coffee, which is just so bizarre to me. But lots of digging found that it's the colour change, the viscosity change, and the change in the radiation of heat that means your coffee that's got milk in it will actually cool down more slowly than if you have a black coffee. And finally, my last fun fact is that the Guinness World Record holder for the oldest cat ever, who was a 38-year-old cat named Cream Puff, drank coffee every morning for her whole life. So cheers to that. And that's all we have time for this week. Thanks for listening in, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you drop by and say hi on the Encore Nutrition website, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Just search for Encore Nutrition. We absolutely want to hear from you and encourage everyone to join in on the conversation and send through your questions.
It's important to say that while we're both qualified accredited practicing dietitians and accredited nutritionists, we always encourage you to speak with your medical professional to ensure the advice is right for you. We're Elise and Lauren, and we'll be back next week to break down all things food, diet, nutrition, and lifestyle.